Hey guys, once again, I just want to thank everyone for all the support they've given us. If you don't know, we launched the website a few weeks ago. We launched the YouTube channel as well. We've been streaming for a bit too. My aspirations for this are much, much higher than I think a lot of people think we can get this to go. But I've never put a limit on myself, and I never put a limit on a group of people coming together for a cause. It might sound kind of cliche or kind of dumb to talk about because we're talking about a card game, but I think we get a lot more from a game than just an entertainment value. I know it might kind of sound weird, but when I first started this, I didn't really want to stream because I'm more of a quiet person. I don't like putting myself out there, especially for people that I don't know or I'm not comfortable around. I'm more of someone that listens than talks, funny enough. You might think it's kind of crazy. So I have some insecurities with that. And once I've started streaming and playing Gwent, it has done more for me than I can really imagine. And I think of people like me out there that might want to get into a community, but just maybe don't feel confident in themselves or feel like they can't offer something to somebody or whatever it may be. And I know that might sound a little sappy, but I feel like it needed to be said. This podcast is much more than just talking about a game. It's about bringing a group of people together to share something that has a lot of entertainment value, but also to help to build us a little bit stronger. So if you're one of those people who want to join into something, I guarantee you we have a spot for you. And you don't have to be a pro player. You can be someone who's just starting out. You can be a pro player. Hell, you can be top 10. It really doesn't matter, right? We want you to be a part of something. This podcast episode is going to focus on currency, how essentially you should be spending it, how do you get it, just really basic questions, because this podcast is focusing on basic to intermediate players. We're also bringing on this podcast as a special guest, the one Christo. He is a part of Team Bandit Gang. If you haven't heard of them, fantastic streamers. I try to lurk in their streams as much as possible. Incredibly approachable people, really make some professional content, but also have a really good time playing it. And they also have some streamers that do not play meta decks. They play off meta decks, which I think can be really refreshing. I know I got a little burned out from this game because I was just trying to play everyone else's deck, and you kind of lose the value there. So I'm not trying to ramble on here because this episode is right around 40 minutes. But yes, thank you guys so much. I really hope you enjoy the podcast episode. And always remember to hit the sub button and go out there and have some fun. So without further ado, our introduction to currency. Welcome back. This is Dark Temp, aka Joe. This is the Barkeep's Redania. We're actually going to be focusing on some currency today. We actually had some requests for this, so we're happy to do it. But first off, I want to introduce someone new to the podcast, the man, the myth, the legend, One Christo. One Christo, tell us about yourself, buddy, and how are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you guys so much for having me. I'm really excited to actually be here and chat a little bit about Gwent because it's something that's been like an adventure for me over the last couple of months. So I started playing Gwent in closed beta, I want to say. My buddy, so Flake is actually a really good buddy of mine, and he got me into it, said this game's great. I've played card games with him my entire life, and he kind of steered me in that direction. I started playing, and it just wasn't clicking in closed beta, and I just kind of gave up on it a few weeks in. And so I ended up streaming. I've been streaming for a little bit more than 6 months now, and I started with Hearthstone, and that was just a dumpster fire of RNG. And Flake kind of kept nudging me back in the direction of getting back into Gwent. And so I gave it a go again and have been hooked on it ever since, just in the way of like the mechanics, how the game itself looks. It's just like above and beyond so much of the other games that I've played. So I've been super, super into it. And honestly, the community has been amazing too. And like you three guys, you know, the opportunity to come on here and chat with you is awesome. So I've just been in love with the game, and being a new player is kind of still near and dear to my heart, because I haven't been, you know, in the game for more than like a couple of months at this point. So I think it's really cool, and I'm excited to chat about that. And you can find me on Twitch, twitch.tv/theonecristo. And normally play Gwent, touch on a bunch of different Witcher stuff too. Been playing through The Witcher 1. I'm into The Witcher 2 now, and doing that kind of stuff. So you'll see me play kind of random CCGs and Witcher-related content.
So that's interesting, I mean, that you brought that up. It seems like the majority of the people that do this are on or streaming were closed beta players. Am I wrong about it? Because that was the exact same way. I played in closed beta. It didn't hook me the way I wanted it to. I stopped playing, and I actually came back because of a Twitter notification that said, this game is available on Android. And I'm like, why am I not playing this? Like, and then I just started playing it. It was crazy.
There's been a few people, like, I know you mentioned that. I actually saw, I forget where you mentioned it. I saw it on Twitter or something, but you had brought that up. There's a couple other people, same kind of thing, played it in closed beta or open beta, kind of fell out of the game and recently came back, like either around Master Mirror or just before it. So it's really interesting. There's been this influx of players. I think coming to Android helped. I think coming to Steam helped as well.
For sure.
Just kind of get that player base going. But there's been a lot of new players and a lot of player growth, which is really, really nice.
I think for me, a lot of it had to do with the fact that when I first started playing, there weren't really many leader abilities. There weren't a lot of card selections and different types of combinations you could do. So it kind of got boring quickly. And as the expansion started to come in, I was able to find new ways to have fun with the game. And as it continues to grow, we're seeing more and more new cards. So I feel like that's a big reason why a lot of people gave it a second chance. Maybe they just turned it on one day, much like myself, and there was a ton of new cards to choose from. And it kind of reeled me back in.
Yeah, I think a good point you brought up too is the community, right? That sucked me on Gwent so quick. I remember when I first started playing and I first started streaming, I think I've brought it up like multiple times in this podcast, but like I had someone come into my chat, introduce me to the game. He actually, like, we did screen sharing, he introduced me to like TLG and some of the top meta decks and where to look. And it was just crazy how nice the community was with everything. And that just stuck with me for the longest time. That's when I tell people about the game or do they want to think about streaming it. I'm like, the community, you cannot find this community anywhere else. There's no toxicity about this community. Maybe there's a little bit, but
you can't avoid that.
You can't avoid it, but it doesn't seem like there's much for sure.
And that's like, it's spot on, because I started streaming and I started streaming Hearthstone, and Hearthstone just feels like it's this giant mass of just people and nobody cares about each other. There is no community unless you're in like the top, I don't know, whatever percentage of either streamers or pro players or whatever it is. But when you're down on the 14th page of streamers and like three people are watching you, nobody cares. A couple of people show up, they lurk, they may chat with you a bit, but nothing. Versus Gwent, you come in and, you know, you can have four or five streamers, but you're on the first page. You got a couple of viewers, people pop in and out, you get rated every once in a while, and you slowly grow within that community. And, you know, next thing you know, you're in, numbers are growing, things are going well, you're having a good time, you become a partner, you're invited to the partner events, the tournaments, and all that kind of stuff. There's a lot of just things to do within the game that isn't just show up, stream for a bit, wait till the next time.
For sure. Blind Phantom brings up that he also started playing an open beta, got back into last week and loving it, and Tanbur 1. Also think it probably has a lot to do with the Witcher series. I think that's probably a very good point as well.
That's a huge point, actually, because I did it all backwards. I started playing Gwent. I kind of stopped for a bit. I watched the series. I came back to Gwent after it. And then, you know, having seen the series, everything kind of made a bit more sense. Then all of a sudden it went from, oh, well, I'm playing Gwent now. I should start reading the books. So I started reading the books, playing the Witcher games, jumped back into the series, and I watched it a second time going, oh, wait, I recognize this character now. I know what's going on here. So I think that made a huge, huge difference, Danbur.
Yeah, it was interesting for the people that play the game and then watch the first episode and see Stregobor and stuff like that. You just get a new appreciation for certain things.
Also, you know, it's the another thing, too, you know, it's just The Witcher 3 being as good of a game as it has been for the past years and only getting better now. And now, you know, with the emergence of Cyberpunk coming out very soon. So, like, the eyes are all on CD Projekt Red right now.
Mm-hmm.
So the community as a whole and then on Twitch is focusing on what can CD Projekt Red bring that'll eclipse, you know, The Witcher 3, but still also make sure that it still has, you know, its niche. And I feel like that Gwent, being that it started on The Witcher 3, was fun, but it got even better when it was made into this game.
Yeah,
and I think it's important to mention, especially for new players or people that are just coming back into playing Gwent, you don't have to have read the books or played the games in sequence or even have played the games at all or watched the show to understand this game. It's nice that because it deals as a really good standalone game, I just find by going back and playing those older games, by watching the TV series, by reading those books, you're getting more lore, which ultimately makes you appreciate Gwent more.
Yeah.
But you could do just fine if you've never seen that stuff and you want to just pick this game up right now and download it.
And think of all the people that spent 95% of the time in The Witcher 3 playing Gwent.
That was me.
I did a second playthrough just to play it and collect all the cards. And I think my friend Sam remembers that. We were hooked on it. And it came to a real game, and it was just life-changing, we'll say. Yeah.
So all very good points. And again, Chris, so thanks so much for joining us. So we are talking about we're actually going to talk about Intro to Nilfgaard. But we're actually putting that on the back burner for a week because somebody wanted or brought up that they would like to hear a little bit more about currency, how currency works, how the reward book works, what cards. I mean, we've talked about in prior episodes when we focus on certain factions, what cards we feel you should be going after first. So we don't want to really talk about that too much. But like, I'm a new player. I'm like super overwhelmed, and I don't know. I have these things called scrap. I have these things called ore. It looks like I can open kegs. It looks like I can use them in arena. I have this stuff called powder. Does it make the card more powerful? What do I do? Help me out here, guys.
You won't see it until actually you earn it, but we'll skip keys for now and we'll go into ore. Ore is basically like the premium money in this game. It's, you know, what you can use to buy cards or buy kegs, I should say. It's really not used for anything else but that. It's just, you just buy kegs. Scrap is mainly used to craft new cards. You get it by either opening up reward trees and them having scrap icons, or just by getting the chests as well that actually have scraps in them. And that, you know, you can obtain them just by either milling other cards, if you don't need them, extra copies, because the game only lets you keep a maximum copy of two. And that's just for bronzes. And then for gold, you can only have a copy of one. So anything over two, there's really no point in keeping. So there is a setting in your deck builder that is called milling. It's something that they recently introduced, I believe maybe a patch or two ago, and it's allows you to mill your library in a sense to a certain way that you want it. You can either have it premium focused, you can have it focused towards standard, or you can do resource. The resource is what I would prefer because it mills all your extra copies, including premiums, that are above the deck limit, and then you can just get nothing but resources that way. So I would say it's the fastest way to get scrap.
So focusing on ore, right? So ore is something that we can use to open kegs. It's also something that we can use to play arena, right?
Yes.
Does anyone play arena? Do we feel like we should be telling the people who are new to Gwent to be playing arena if they want to build their cards?
So The arena for me was kind of the first question I asked when Flake was showing me how to play the game, because in so many other games I had like dabbled in Runeterra a little bit and people were telling me, oh, go through the expeditions, which is essentially arena for them. It's the best way to gain resources. And so I thought of that same direction and went, well, that could be a great way to do it. And I mean, Flake pretty much told me nobody plays arena, so don't bother. But looking back at it and thinking about it, you know, you also have the opportunity to get a little bit confused with the synergies and how the game itself works when you're in arena, because your leader abilities, your factions are all mixed together. It's not as clear cut as it is when you're building a deck and learning the cards and learning the synergies. So it can be a little bit confusing when you're kind of going through it, trying to learn that way. And I mean, reward wise, it's probably a viable option to build your collection, but it feels very, very separate from the rest of the game.
That's a good point about the cards. Now, Tambor 1 brings up that Arena is getting removed. I thought it was just being put aside until they're removing the rewards or something until they fix it.
Yeah, they're changing the whole principle of Arena to more of a draft selection or something to that effect.
Yeah.
I think they're just waiting to see how they want to bring it out to make it more successful than the first take. And honestly, one of my thoughts on Arena mode is that it's very good for a more rehearsed player, someone who's been doing this for a while, so they understand every faction perfectly. Because it does cost resources to get in, and because you actually might be playing against pro players and other very experienced players, as someone who is new to the game, you might put yourself in a position where you're wasting resources. Because you have to win games in the old arena mode to actually get better prizes. And if you're not winning games, after 3 losses, you're eliminated from arena. So it's something to consider. If I was a new player, I would be focusing on playing ranked and unranked games just to get the rewards from GGs after every game, because you'll get little scraps or little ore depending if someone GGs you. So, you know, that's probably the place to start.
That's a good point. And Evades brings up, you know, that it costs 100 ore now and you don't have a good chance, especially if you're new to the game, not getting your value back that you spent. And they're looking at leaning it towards newer players to teach general mechanics or terminology. That's a really good point as well with Arena. So we've pushed Arena aside. That is not a viable option if I'm new to the game, especially. So I think it comes down to what are you trying to get out of the game, right? So if I'm trying to get out of the game that I want to get good at the game, I want to climb the ladder, I want to get as many cards as possible without spending money, we've already determined Arena is not the way. So what's the way? With ore. So I'm going to be opening kegs, right? Should I be opening faction-specific kegs, or should I be opening premium kegs? Should I be opening expansion kegs?
So to get ore, the fastest way would be in your reward tree, and scattered around each individual reward tree, there's like these little scroll-looking icons. And each one will give you a set amount of ore. The first one being 250, 300 for the second, 350 for the third, and then 500. If you buy each one of these, they're 5 keys each, then it increases the amount of ore you're getting. So if you get, you know, the previous 3 in any reward tree, then, you know, you're going to get 500 on the 4th purchase. So 20 keys will get you 500 ore, basically, if you want to put it in that sense. I feel like that's the fastest way to get ore if you really want to make cards quickly, because, you know, the more ore you get, the more kegs you can buy, and it's 100 ore per keg.
And I think one of the things that really stands out about this game versus other CCGs I've played is the fact that you can get faction kegs and you can go into your reward book and you can work through one specific faction at a time. So you can go and say, I want to start with monsters and I'm going to have a basic Thrive monster deck, which is fairly simple. You can find it on, you know, TLG's got some resources, Bandit Gang has some resources, Cheap Plug. So you can find a few different resources out there to find a very basic kind of deck. You put something together and you say, I'm going to grind monsters for a bit. You grind that deck and you go into the reward book and you're buying, you know, because you can actually get kegs through the reward book as well. So you can go through that, start collecting, jump into the store, use that ore that we were talking about to go buy those kegs. And then once you feel good about that collection, well, you jump into the next reward tree and say, I want to play Northern Realms next. And you jump into that one, you start unlocking there.
Yeah, it's a good point. 100%. I think, again, it's visiting what you want to do, right? If you want to play nothing but monsters, that's your faction you love. Someone like, let's say, like Ocean Mud, right? So the amount of monster wins he has. So that's were you going to say something, Cusenta?
Yeah, I have a point to make. I think for a lot of new players, and you know, generally when people stop on my streams and they're serious about picking up the game, you know, I'll try and help them get towards the pro rank. And right now I'm working with a couple guys who have been climbing off just one deck. And I find by sticking to one faction at the beginning, it gives you a bit of an advantage, right? Without having the availability of all these like 1,000 cards in the game, for example, you could just focus on that 150 or so for that one faction and get really good at that one faction, right? It's better, in my opinion, to kind of start that way just so that you can really understand it before you progress and move on to something else. And that's probably what I would do. I'd probably go out and just start to buy faction-specific kegs for the beginning, just until you're comfortable.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So Blind Phantom says for new players, he feels that you should look at the reward book and kind of look at the most efficient way to climb it, which I think is a great idea. And then evades 100% on Yuku Sento. That's the way to do it. Instead of spreading yourself thin, try to learn one concept at a time, get good at it, climb the ladder, get confident in yourself so you're not losing constantly, and then move your way over to something new. So all good points.
Yeah, because for somebody who doesn't put a lot of time into the game, to try to figure out the whole resource system and then trying to spread yourself thin with learning 6 different factions, each faction, you know, having their own type of playstyle, it can get kind of overwhelming with, okay, I got to remember how this faction plays, I got to remember what I got to do in this tree, like, you know, trying to remember, you know, spreading out and try to find, you know, the fastest resources you can get. Most likely, something I did notice is in the older expansions, they are a little bit more expensive when it comes to buying each upgrade, I guess, if you want to call it that, or node. But they do offer more rewards. Like everything in the Crimson Curse expansion and everything in the Merchants expansion does give you quite a lot of rewards for the key cost.
Yeah, so I think we're kind of focused on or the best way to use it is to open kegs, and probably the best way is to open faction specific kegs. If you're trying to climb the ladder, get good, get as many cards as you can. I think that we've kind of, I mean, we have different opinions, but I think that's kind of where we're going with that. So now we have scrap, right? And scrap is a currency we use to craft cards. So if you go through your book, you're, you know, queuing up what cards, what factions, whatever it may be, you'll see a cost to scrap the card, to make the card. You can also break those cards down. Let's say we were talking about auto milling. So let's say you have 4 or 5 copies of something all auto. But when we're talking about making cards, how should I focus on spending my scrap?
I mean, we all know that the game does have its generous amount of legendary cards, but focus on the ones that are going to make a difference in your deck, being, you know, your scenario, your evolving cards, your tutors, like those kind of things that you want to spend your scraps on to make. The neutral cards are probably what's going to take you the longest to make with your scraps, being that most of them are 800 cost cards. So like, yeah, like, and the stratagems as well. Like, there's a lot of things you could put your scraps towards, but focus on stuff that's going to make your deck better.
And to simplify, what I would say is the bronze cards are accessories and sort of additions to the main centerpiece. And that should be what you spend your big scraps on, right? The big play, your scenario card, or your big removal card, or the big playmaker. And everything else is just there to help it out. So you don't necessarily need a lot of gold cards and a lot of expensive cards, but you certainly need a couple big plays to win games. And there's a lot of bronze cards that are relatively inexpensive to craft and do quite a bit to help them out. So I would say, you know, focus on a couple really big legendaries and then some all-around cards in the middle that are relatively cheap, and then just, you know, some bronze cards with good synergy, right?
I think you're spot on there, Q, and I think a big part of it is because a lot of those bronze cards can be sort of interchangeable. You can find other support cards that do similar things, have similar point values, but when you start getting to those gold cards, and especially the legendary cards, they do specific things that you can't necessarily find in another card. You can't replace it. You can't swap it out. You know, if you need a scenario, you need that scenario. There's nothing else like it in the game. Versus you've got a couple bronzes, maybe you do lose a couple points in putting something that you have versus the ideal one, but you're not having that much of an impact on your deck itself. And I think for myself, when I was kind of learning this, it was exactly what I was talking about earlier. The community was so, so helpful. If you need to know what to craft, if you're not sure what deck to play, like, go out and ask. The Gwent Discord is a great place to go. Every team has a Discord. You can jump in there. They usually all have a deck section. You can ask about it. Hey, I want to play this. What can be swapped? What do I absolutely need? What are non-negotiables? Like, go ask questions if you can, if that's an option for you, because I think it's a great way to learn and not just get a black and white. Well, this one seems better because it's got more points. You actually get a little bit more flavor to it around, you know, this card is great and it's usable in multiple decks within that faction. So you're going to get the most value out of it.
Yeah, I think that's all really good points. You know, and like, you can get overwhelmed quickly too. I know when I was, when I first started, I got introduced to TLG and I was so overwhelmed by it. I didn't even look at it for the longest time. And I was just like spending my scrap to make the decks they said were really good. But then I started to play them and I was like, I don't understand what I'm doing. Like, this doesn't make any sense. So I think you make a great point. Get into people's Discord. If you guys are new to the game, you'll see that different people stream throughout the day. If you're more of a morning or afternoon person, it's always great people. Cheap plug. I mean, he was talking about before, but Team Bandit Gang is a great, great group to follow too. They're streaming throughout the day and throughout the night too. So follow them, look at their deck guides as well. I mean, there's just so many resources, right? And then you're talking about a podcast where we bring together, I think, a lot of really good players too. Another great way to figure out like what you should be doing the best. But again, bronze pieces are important, but when you're building a deck, you have to have an idea before you build your deck, right? What's going to be my win condition on this deck? How am I going to get round one and round three? How am I going to win first? Is my deck going to be focused on getting last say? Is it going to be focused on pushing round two? Whatever it may be. And those big cards, those 800 scrap cards, those are going to be the cards I think that are going to set you apart, right? I mean, it's... So I'm playing the game. This was something I kind of struggled with a lot in the beginning. I'm playing the game. I'm opening up kegs. I'm getting cards I don't have. But there's this card I really want. I'm just going to say it for Filthguard. I really want Masquerade Ball. But I don't have the scrap. Should I be scrapping cards I don't play to get the scrap to build cards I want to play?
It's a yes and no kind of question. What I would do for a new player is I would try to keep two copies of every bronze card in your deck, because bronze cards are so interchangeable that you might find better combinations the more you play the deck. So you want to have them available to play. I would look at milling the additional golds if you have duplicates of something else, or if there's something that you're certain that you'll never put inside of a deck, because I'm sure we can all think of a couple cards that have little to no use in the game. But I would try to focus on gathering new resources opposed to trying to make some with your existing card collection, because when you mill cards, you're only getting 25% of the scraps back from what it costs to make the card.
Which is true. And yes.
I agree on it being like, it's such a yes and no kind of deal. If you're looking at building a certain deck and you're looking to push with a certain faction and you're missing a key card like Masquerade Ball, definitely not ideal to go cannibalize other factions or other decks. But if there are things you're not going to be playing for the foreseeable future, you know, you really have that mindset to, I'm playing Nilfgaard, I'm going to try and push to pro with this, and monsters isn't important to me, maybe I'll come back to it later, and you want to start scrapping a couple of those cards, I think you can. I agree, you know, maybe look at some of those cards you probably won't put into a deck. That might be through conversations, again, Discord, streamers, all that kind of stuff. Like, go out there and try and have a conversation, because there are cards that just never see play and you can mill them without an issue. But yeah, try and find ways around it. But if all else fails, I think it's totally fine to do it. Again, if you have that mindset of, I need to be able to push this deck forward and I'm missing some key cards for it.
Yeah, when I'm going through the reward book, right, we're getting keys around the process. So another really good way, as we get keys, you'll actually see trophies that help you push through the reward book to continue going through the reward book. How important are dailies in getting that type of scrap or something like that? Do we think that's incredibly important, or do we think it's not as rewarding as it should be?
I mean, some of them can make a difference. You know, if you just need that little bit of extra ore to get that extra keg or that extra key or two from doing the challenges in the dailies, that can make a difference, you know, because that extra key or two could get you another scroll, to, you know, to up your ore purchasing, you know. But the one thing, like I was talking to everybody last night, was is Journey. Journey is something that a lot of people will just see it and they just instantly shoot it off because it's got cosmetics on the bottom. But that's not entirely true. Journey has a lot of keys for the free to player route on the top part of the tree, and then it has the bottom part, right, which throws in the occasional cosmetics, kegs, also other extra keys as well. But once you hit 100, that's when it becomes really rewarding. I just hit 179 for Journey, and I just got 80 keys for finally hitting, you know, the max Journey rank in a sense. And that's just that was a lot of ore. I got about 4,000 ore just from buying all the squirrels throughout the trees with 80 keys.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I mean, Journey can really give you your money's worth. $10 for, or however much it is in your country, wherever you're playing from. It's $10 in the U.S., but however much you're paying for, Journey will give you your money back and then some, because I believe when they reinstated this season's Journey Pass, what was it? I think they said that Journey will reward you with almost like 280 keys throughout the entire thing once you hit 175. So, wow. I mean, that's a lot.
Journey's like a no-brainer.
Yeah,
honestly, absolutely. The second I saw it, I bought it. I actually did a video because I was curious, like, is it worth it? And within the first, if you just count the amount of kegs you get on the premium track versus the dollar value you spend, just the kegs themselves makes it worthwhile. Because I think you get 10 kegs and half of them are premium kegs. So like that alone is worth more than the amount of money you're putting in to actually buy the premium track.
Yeah, and they even also stated too that rank 94 gives you a guaranteed legendary card, and it's premium at that. So, I mean, that right there makes it worth it, too.
No. Yeah, I think it's an absolute no-brainer, for sure. Like, I this game is so rewarding. It's more rewarding, I think, than it really needs to be. But I'll say that too loud. They might hear me. But, yeah, it's incredibly rewarding. Kilogram Sam takes the award of the year. He says he mills Skellige because he doesn't want to play it. You are traitor. My hero.
Yeah, traitor. I was just going to say, hero. He's definitely traitor. Making some friends with that comment.
Oh, my God.
That's for another podcast, though, because I'll rage. I'll shut the mouth down. But so powder. So we're getting to powder, right? Yes. Pretty much, if I'm a new player, that's just cosmetics. That doesn't do me anything but cosmetics, right?
It makes your opponent friggin' scared, man. They see all the shiny cards, the shiny cards on the battlefield. You know, they get cool animations as well, but it's mainly cosmetics. The way that I like to spend them, though, is you can actually use them to buy, like, avatars and borders and sometimes even skins and, you know, boards for the game. So if you frequent the Gwent shop, you'll actually see every so often they'll put a board up and stuff like that. So I would hold on to them and spend them on stuff you really want to think, you know, you really want to make it cool. You know what I mean? Don't just pull it out into bronze cards. And
if you put the racing stripes on your car, it goes faster. It's the same concept, 100%. Right?
Exactly.
100%. I just let, honestly, chat bully me while I'm streaming to just premium random cards. But, I mean, to bring up another point, they're talking about card games. Like, this game's art is, like, second to none. It is stunning. The premiums are gorgeous. The fact they all have voice lines and everything, too. Just so nice.
There's the book. There it is.
There it is.
That's a great point, because besides the community and how rewarding this game is, I can stare at premium art cards all day. Like, it's some of the most gorgeous art. Kusenda was just holding up the Gwent art book. But yeah, I mean, the premium cards, they're just absolutely fantastic. So, and I think you look cooler for sure if you have them. So,
Sorry, I was going to say I made a premium squirrel the other day. It's probably the best thing I did this month.
Made a premium squirrel.
Yeah,
premium squirrel is legit.
Yeah, that was one of the first cards I premiumed to. When I first saw squirrel was coming in Master Mirror, I'm like, I got to have it. And I premiumed it that day.
Dude, I hate to bring that card up. But I remember the first episode we did with Master Bear, I told you that card was going to be underplayed in the beginning, but people were going to start playing it. And Squirrel. See me?
It's a Squirrel. I love the Squirrel.
It's a staple now.
Big time, man.
Got to have it to stop the echoes.
Squirrel stands right up. Damn right, Jay Huggies.
Yep. Oh, Huggies.
So we did those. We did the reward book. We talked about whether you should buy the Journey Pass, which I think we all think is a really good idea. What else would you guys recommend around currency? What else would you think that we should talk about for new players or even just intermediate players? Like people who...
So a lot of the players that I've met just randomly going into random Twitch streams is a lot of players don't know about the faction packs in the shop. I don't know if they still are available. I bought them all already, but in the shop, there's in the pack section, there's faction packs, and I believe each one will give you 5 kegs, one of the evolving card, and I believe a card back. I could be wrong. I don't know. Title. Border. Yeah, border. Yeah.
Border.
That right there is a steal to get, Herald for Skellige, to get, Usurper for Nilfgaard. You can get, Ethne for Scoidzel and so on. Like, for $5, that is a steal.
Considering what, 2 kegs is like $3?
Yeah, something like
that. So for less than 4 kegs, you're getting 5 plus a legendary, probably the best legendary per faction, plus a border that looks cool.
And also, I thought of something, guys, for all you newer players, because it took me a long time to figure this out. A lot of the journey rewards don't load until you actually go to the journey mode and click it. So I'm sure you guys have been here before where you're like, man, I've been grinding and winning so many games, but the keys aren't coming in. Trust me, go to the main menu, click journey right now, and I guarantee some of you guys are going to get some keys pop up on the screen.
Yeah, it's definitely a good point, because I started that and I was like, why didn't I get anything? And then I hit it and it's just like ding, ding, ding. Do, 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 do.
Something else I discovered recently that I never bothered really looking at was contracts. So you've got these contracts to go and complete, and you know what? I was getting some of them randomly as time went on and I would scroll through them. But even now, like 6 months in, I've gotten into the habit of actually starring them and sticking them so I can follow through of, oh, well, if I win 2 more games with this leader ability, I get 5 keys. Or if I wound something 3 more times, I get 5 keys. And they're little things that if you keep top of mind, they're really easy to accomplish. They give you usually a good amount of keys and rewards. So if you focus on some of those, you can really, really make out with some good amount of rewards pretty quickly and easily.
Yeah, that's a super good point. So you can get some reward, or you'll be playing and then all of a sudden you'll get this reward. You're like, wait, what am I getting this for? And it's like, oh, you opened this many kegs, or you bled this many enemies. It's like, oh, well, there you go.
Another thing I would suggest too, and it's just a really quick way to get the keys, go and play Thronebreaker. Thronebreaker just gives you keys just for completing the story. Each chapter, I believe, gives you 2 keys. And then the collecting all the cards in game will give you keys as well, along with titles and borders.
It also gives you cards, right? There's a
throw cards too
that gets imported into the game after you beat it.
I was going to say, I don't even think you have to beat it. You literally have to open the game, because I own Thronebreaker and I opened it and I haven't touched it yet. And I really should get to it.
Yeah,
I have it. And you, once you go into Gwent, it literally loads every card from that set into your client. So you don't get the premiums. I think it's the premiums you get by beating or unlocking certain chests.
Yes.
But as soon as you open it, you get all the cards. So that is another great way. And Thronebreaker is almost always on sale for like under $10, I want to say. And
Crystal, you'd love that game. It's like top down, click around, you're looting everything. But the actual conflict is Gwent games.
Yeah.
That's super cool.
It's super cool. So if you stream that, I'm watching that, man.
Perfect. So my whole deal was I wanted to finish The Witcher 2, and then I would go over and start playing Thronebreaker. So it's on the docket. It's coming up.
Perfect.
Yeah, the art's gorgeous as well. I would say if you're a new player, be careful, because a lot of the cards in Thronebreaker do things completely different than what they
Bomb Heaver OP in Thronebreaker, by the way. So,
you could rack up like 1,000-point rounds at the end game.
You can.
Yeah.
So be careful. And yeah, J-Hugs is saying it has cross-save with Switch and PC now. Oh, shit. I didn't even know it was on Switch.
Yeah, you can take Thronebreaker on the go now.
Jesus.
I think it came to iOS too recently.
Almost better.
Yeah, people really want. I think people really want Thronebreaker on Android. I believe that'll get a lot of sales if it goes to Android.
It's a huge game, though. It's like, I think it took me like 60, 70 hours worth of playtime to finish it.
Yeah. If CDPR does anything right, it's the length of their games. You do not feel gypped when you spend money on one of their games.
Yeah, when we all switch to Cyberpunk, we're definitely going to get our money's worth with that game.
I'm just going to compliment the Gwent.
I think I've bought The Witcher 3 more than I've bought in the Battle.net Battle Chest when they used to sell the StarCraft all together. Because I'm just like, you guys deserve all this money, and I don't know how to give it to you, so I'm just going to buy like 10 copies of The Witcher 3 and just hand them to my friends. But yeah, that's a really great game, but I think we're coming up to the end, guys. You guys have anything else you want to talk about, or you guys want to plug something, or it's your time to do it?
Always. Go ahead, Christo. You're the guest.
Oh, I get to go first. Awesome. So I mentioned before, I'm a member of Team Bandit Gang, and we actually have our first tournament, Duel of the Dogs, coming up next weekend. So there is a community qualifier if you guys want to join, coming up on the 28th of October. And then the main event is on the 31st of October and the 1st of November. Did I say that right? 28th of October. Yeah. So qualifiers next Wednesday. So that is what I would recommend. You can check it out on Bandit Gang's website, search us up, or come by any of our streams. We'd be happy to give you all the details.
Very good.
It's Cusento, known by Cusento01 on Twitch, because someone took my name. And I stream 4 days a week, and I upload YouTube videos every Monday. So you can check me out on YouTube. What I'm doing is deck guides. So to give new players some ideas on how they can progress to pro rank quicker, I run through some test games in pro to show you that they work and how to play them and whatnot. So definitely worth checking out.
Anything, Ezra?
I am just the Yoda in the background of Twitch chats, by the way. I'm just
kidding. What about the lurker extraordinaire?
I like to troll, you know. We have our own tournament too coming up that me and Dark have been planning for a while. We tried to do an amateur tournament. It didn't turn out like how we wanted it to, but it was our first tournament. But this is our first real tournament for pros that's coming up also on the 28th of next week. Yes. We've already got all of the spots filled, so I cannot wait to start that. We're going to also be streaming that from my channel, and then we'll also think about making a Barkeeps of Redania channel as well, so that way we can actually have our own official channel on Twitch for that. And then also, Lemimsky told me that one of her viewers, Zibalba, I believe is his name, He actually wants to cast it in French. He's got over about 200 people that want to watch from the EU, but they want to watch it in French.
Absolutely.
So yeah, we have to figure out how we can get that set up as well.
I speak French, so we're good to go.
Yeah, we can cast it.
That'd be pretty cool if I did, though.
I was like, yeah, he wants to cast it in French, so he wants to know how he can watch it and then cast it in French for his audience.
That'd be a little difficult, but we can, But, otherwise than that, guys, thank you so much for joining us. And to do a quick plug for us, thebarkeepsofredania.com is our website. We started that a few weeks ago. If you guys want to RSVP for the podcast, if you're interested in being on it, if you're interested in being a part of the team, if you're interested in contributing to the website, whatever it may be, we always have a spot for the community. Also, YouTube channel, the same name, Barkeeps of Redania. You can find me at darktemp66. Streaming, great for beginners because you can see all the shit you shouldn't do. I fall on the sword for you guys. Keep that in mind. I fall on the sword. But guys, thank you so much for joining us. Hit the subscribe button in your favorite podcast engine as well, just so you can get notifications when we're going live. But again, guys, thank you so much and have a wonderful night.